Because our hair is long.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now until September 21st, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact and double the fun.
This is the battleground.
Hi, I'm Jeff Rosenberg. Tune in to the Song Circle every Friday afternoon at 1:30 p.m.
Turn their backs on the grisly scenes, traced to the privileged sons. And your death will come soon.
You never know what you'll hear next.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien, and we've got a great show for you today.
Before we get started, a reminder that KBOO's membership drive is going on now. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you and me. You can help us reach our fundraising goal today. Please go to kboo.fm/give. And thank you very much. We appreciate your support.
Now, it's common knowledge that walking is good for us. It can regulate weight, improve our sleep, elevate mood, transform stress, and boost creativity and productivity. And indeed, most people want to walk more. But today's guest on Pathways asks, what if the key isn't just to walk more, but to walk better, to connect with your physical body and unlock more energy, more vitality, and more fuel for imagination and creativity? Our guest today is Michael Gelb, co-author of the new book, Walking Well, A New Approach for Experiencing Comfort and Vitality in Every Step. Michael's a pioneer in the fields of creative thinking, executive coaching, and innovative leadership. He's a fifth-degree black belt in Aikido and a gifted teacher of Tai Chi and the Alexander Technique. He's also a professional juggler who has performed with the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan. He is the author of 17 books, including the bestseller, How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci, which has been translated into 25 languages and sold more than 1 million copies. In Michael's illustrious career, he founded High Performance Learning, a training, coaching, and consulting firm way back in 1982. And he's been active with the conscious capitalism movement since its inception and co-authored The Healing Organization, Awakening the Conscience of Business to Help Save the World. And wow, is that a fascinating topic for a future Pathways conversation? I just want to greet you, Michael. Welcome to the Pathways.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Great to be with you.
You know, before we start talking about walking, I mean, you just wrote a book about walking. I mean, we're gonna, and I want to talk about that. But you, and I heard an interview of you on YouTube or something, and you said that you learned the seven principles of how of creative thinking, like Leonardo da Vinci, from a dream. And can you kind of unpack that for me?
Sure. Well, Leonardo da Vinci was my childhood hero, along with Superman. It was my Italian grandmother, Rosa, who was an artist, who told me about Leonardo, and he seemed to embody all of our human potentiality and possibility. So of course, when I got a little older, I realized Superman was only a comic book character, but Leonardo was real. And then by a delightful series of synchronicities, I was invited around the world to teach corporate groups how to think creatively. And I would tell stories about Leonardo da Vinci, and they really seemed to resonate with all the people in my classes. So that led to an opportunity to speak for Young Presidents Organization, YPO,
group right.
of company presidents. I was speaking to their university event in Washington, D.C., one of their premier events. But I knew that they were having one of these universities in Florence, Italia, which is my favorite city, and I really wanted to get invited. So I imagined a scenario. I imagined that the chair of education for Florence might be in Washington and might approach me and might ask me something like, hey, if we were to invite you to Florence, what would you do? And I figured he might say something like, we want something really special because everybody wants to come to Florence. Well, I'm sure you've had something like that happen in your life where you picture something and it just happens exactly as you pictured it. I finish my talk in DC, gentleman approaches me. He says, I'm the education chair for Florence. He says, if we were to invite you, what would you do? And then he said, better be something special because everybody wants to come to Florence. So I looked him in the eye and I just said, how about how to think like Leonardo da Vinci? And he said, can you really do that? And I said, sure. So I had 6 months to make it up to go give a talk to this very critical group of CEOs. But this was a lifelong interest and passion. So I started reading everything I could again about Leonardo, read his notebooks over and over again. I traveled the world. I went to his birthplace. I went to the place he died. I literally walked in his footsteps. I interviewed some of the leading Da Vinci scholars. And yes, I started dreaming about him. And from these dreams, I had this question in mind, what's he trying to teach us? What's the message encoded in his notebooks for us today to enrich the quality of our lives? So intuitively, those principles came to me, and then I found Italian names for them, working with the leading Italian language scholar from Rutgers University, who was the brother of one of my clients. And when my client said, this guy is writing a book about how to think like Leonardo da Vinci, this Italian scholar said, who would dare to do that? and his brother said to him, well, he's part Italian, so he has a good feeling for Leonardo, and he's part Jewish, so he has the chutzpah to do it.
Okay. Well, that's a great story. Did Leonardo da Vinci spend time in Florence? I don't know.
Yes, he did. He was born about 30 miles outside of Florence.
I see.
They call it Vinci, but the little place he was born in is actually called Anciano. But now they have a whole museum there, and obviously they make a lot of hay based on Leonardo's origin story there. But he was an apprentice in Florence to Verrocchio, the great master of the time. And then Leonardo eventually started his own studio. But when he was a little older, in his mid-20s, he was disenchanted with Florence. He moved to Milan. He was there for about 17 years. And then he became a refugee, traveled around with different... He basically needed a corporate sponsor.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling you before, you know, I came to Portland because Nike sponsored me a number of times. Actually, I met Phil Knight. And when I met him, one of the people who was sponsoring my seminar said, Phil, you know, I want you to introduce you to Michael Gelb. He's the author of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. And Phil was great. He said, wow. He said, well, I guess we could do a book called How to Think Like Phil Knight, but it would be a very small book because I don't really think much.
Right. Well, it's kind of an interesting thing for him to say. I mean, he immediately elevates his ego, but then he says something self-disparaging. I mean, anyway, that's cool. All right. Well, thank you for telling that story. That's really interesting. You know, I've got another penetrating question for you. And that is, you know, you've been a leader in the field of creativity and innovation, but you've also gained mastery in a couple of the martial arts and the Alexander technique, which is basically a physical thing. Is there kind of, how do you reconcile that? I mean, on the one hand, it's about creativity and innovation, which is kind of like a, you know, a function of the intuition or the imagination, or it's a mental thing. And then on the other hand, you're like deeply grounded in these physical arts. So reconcile that for me.
Sure. Well, to me, there's no separation. There are different ways into the expression of our wholeness, our full human potential, which is what I've always been interested in. So I like the term from the brilliant people at the Hoffman Institute. They call
I
it
did the Hoffman Training. I did the Hoffman Training twice.
Oh, really?
Right. I did it twice. I was a remedial student.
Well, so you know about the quadrinity. Yeah. So there's our spiritual self, our mental self, our emotional self, and our physical self.
Right.
And how do you align and tune and optimize all of them and then integrate them? So that's always been my interest. That's what I studied in college. That's what I studied in graduate school. And that's what I've been studying and teaching for my entire career.
So do the martial arts skills play into becoming more creative and innovative for your clients? I mean, do you bring
very
it?
Very much so.
Oh, okay.
Very much so. Yes. Because, you know, it's one thing, I'm not so much interested in teaching people how to fight physically, although early on in my martial arts career, I was really maniacally focused on that. And I still have a full-size punching dummy in my garage. But you know, everybody's interested in this word presence. How do you have executive presence?
Right.
And when you can walk onto a mat and be calm and centered when people come and try to hit you with a stick, a couple people try to do that at the same time, it's relatively easy to walk into a boardroom. So, well, so I always thought it was really good training. Yeah.
That's a good point. So what inspired you to now write a book about walking? I mean, that seems a little boring compared to these modalities that you've excelled at.
Well, the cool thing is I actually find it wildly interesting and fascinating. And I'll tell you why, because it is a good question. So having trained in Aikido really intensively, having trained as an Alexander Technique teacher. My first book is called Body Learning, An Introduction to the Alexander Technique. It was my master's thesis that I wrote almost 50 years ago. And then I studied intensively Qigong and Tai Chi, which I also teach. So my first post-pandemic trip back to Santa Fe, where I used to live, a friend of mine who's also an Alexander Technique teacher and Aikido guy and Tai Chi guy contacted me. He heard I was coming and he said, for the last 20 years, I've been focusing everything I've ever learned about kinesthetic proprioceptive intelligence on walking, because I think walking is the most important thing that we can really help people do more effectively. And he said, I'd like to share with you what I've come up with, because I think there's a possibility that this could be a book.
And he was the guy, he was an Alexander Technique guy like you.
He's an Alexander Technique colleague. He had trained many Alexander Technique teachers.
Okay.
And he's a very gifted, he's a kinesthetic genius. The guy was got a full scholarship to Penn State in gymnastics, and then was a professional modern dancer. So he's very, very gifted and a brilliant teacher.
So I notice in the book that you point out a correlation between the Alexander Technique and having a good walking gait.
So it seems to be research validated. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We know that Alexander Technique teachers tend to have a much better gait than people who aren't involved in the Alexander Technique of the same general age group. And that becomes that much more important as we get older. So my friend Bruce told me that when he first moved to New Mexico, he walked up this famous long slope. It's called the Pedernal. It was one of George O'Keefe's favorite places to walk. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I think it's over 4 miles up. And he told me that now he's 73, 74, and he can walk it faster and with less effort than he did when he was 40 years old.
Wow.
He said, so let me show you what I've come up with. So I got together with him and I told him, I said, look, treat me like a beginner. Treat me like a novice. I know nothing. Show me how to walk. Show me what you got. And I was skeptical, but open-minded. So he gave me a 45-minute private class. And towards the end of it, it utterly transformed my experience of every step I have taken since then. And that was the epiphany that said, oh my God, this is a way of taking all of the brilliance and the genius and the kinesthetic proprioceptive intelligence that's woven into the Alexander Technique, that's woven into Aikido, that's woven into Tai Chi and Qigong, and making it accessible to people in something that they're already doing, but that they can do with so much more comfort, so much more vitality, and so much more inspiration if we can figure out how to take what Bruce shared with me and put it in the book, which we did.
Okay, and you make a point in the book that walking, that our walking suffers as we age. It gets worse. Can you speak to that?
Sure. Well, so I live here in Rhinebeck, New York, and I have a beautiful picture window, which I've been looking out of as I've been writing the book, because all my neighbors go for walks because they've read how good it is for your health. And you can see them out there overstriding, shuffling, schlepping along because almost, and I look at this with total compassion because I had a hip replacement, I had a knee replacement, I've had a shoulder replacement. You know, that's what lots of martial arts will do for you.
Right.
So I've had to more than once relearn how to walk. And, you know, my gait is improving as I get older because I know what I know from the Alexander Technique already, from Tai Chi, but now from what we've collaborated on in walking well. So I look at my neighbors and I see that, you know, a lot of them no doubt have had injuries, have had various traumas.
Right.
As the years go by, do you know anybody who hasn't had injuries and traumas? I don't.
Yeah.
And even when we recover from the injury or the trauma, let's say it's a knee replacement or a hip replacement, very common. Even after you recover from the surgery, there's a tendency to unconsciously compensate for the stress on your system by contracting a little bit, by stiffening a little bit. And then that becomes part of your gait, unless you raise your kinesthetic proprioceptive awareness to notice that you're doing something unnecessary.
I see.
So you stop doing it.
Right. So you're going to naturally degrade over time if you're not being mindful or not being conscious, or if you don't have the capacity to be conscious because you don't have this knowledge.
Well, so
that's why you wrote the book. And that's why everybody should.
That's why we wrote it. No, that seriously, I really felt, oh my God, we can help millions and millions of people just from the first section of the book. You'll learn biomechanical, simple ways to think about every step that make it just a little bit easier. Imagine if every step for the rest of your life is a little bit less effort.
Yeah, but
you got a little more energy.
How much credit or debit should we give to shoes or to footwear? You know, it's like, doesn't the ergonomics, isn't there an ergonomic aspect? Like, take me, for instance. I was told I have flat feet. Well, that doesn't sound good. But I don't really want to dedicate myself to getting high arch supports and every shoe I own, that kind of thing. I don't really know. But I don't remember if you went into shoes in the book.
We consciously chose not to do it.
I thought.
No,
I looked it up in the index. I couldn't find shoe. Yeah.
I interviewed a bunch of podiatrists, and I was trying to do the research and say, could we make some general recommendations? Because everybody asked. But you know what? I know lots of people who love to walk barefoot, and I know lots of people who love those shoes that you have a little thing that defines each toe. And I know lots of people who love Birkenstocks and Hokas and Merrells and, of course, Nikes. And what Bruce and I both decided is your shoes or your lack of shoes are your own business. What we're going to teach you will help you walk well whatever you do. Unless we can't help you if you wear high heels. So that's the one thing I would say is, wear high heels only for show for a brief period of time. Don't walk around them.
Anyway, walking meditation. This is something else you touch on in the book. And I've been on a lot of meditation retreats that featured walking meditation time. You know, and, it's all about being slow and mindful. I've been in a... So tell us about you get into the third part of the book. It's about inspiration and how walking can support inspiration and creativity. And you mentioned walking meditation.
Yes. So we have lots of wonderful walking meditations in the book, but I want to get to the heart of why is it that walking in this more mindful and more biomechanically balanced way will help you feel more connected to the universe, to consciousness, to awakening, to nature, and to yourself, to your own intuition.
Right.
And the reason is actually simple. We all know about, for example, the sense of taste and the sense of smell. We all know that there's a lot of language that perfumers have for smell, or wine connoisseurs have, and chefs have lots of words for taste. And we have lots of words for sound, which we learn from music critics. But our vocabulary for kinesthesia and proprioception tends to be somewhat limited. I feel good or bad. I feel heavy or light. We don't have that many distinctions. And what Bruce and I aim to do in the book and in our classes is help people get a much better, more accurate moment-to-moment sense of their kinesthesia and their proprioception. And of course, one of the absolute best ways to do that is to go for a walk in nature. But if you walk the way we teach you to, you'll feel more. You'll literally get more sense from your body, from every step, from the earth supporting you. You'll roll your foot, you'll peel it along the ground. You will get more of your sensory mechanism tuning in and being receptive in every step. And as your gait becomes more rhythmic and more fluid, you start to get this rhythmic sense of your body, which massages your internal organs and gets your circulation going and opens up and balances your breathing. So now you're feeling more buoyant and attuned to yourself. And here's where the magic comes. When your kinesthetic and proprioceptive senses are attuned and balanced and rhythmically in harmony in the way I'm describing, you become more receptive to your interoceptive sense.
Right.
That's your gut feeling. That's your heart, your blood, your bones speaking to you. So it's kinesthetic, proprioceptive, interoception, KPI. That's what really works the magic.
Now, you write in the book, many great thinkers have insisted that walking is one of the keys to their creativity. So this is what you're talking about right now. It's like, you know, walking, the way that you are teaching people to walk, in my mind, other than, you know, just the physical benefits of it, it's a form of meditation in and of itself. It's like a mindful thing to do, but it seems like, you know, you can go on this meditative experience of walking and create a platform for creative ideas and inspirations to arise in your mind.
And
I think that's beautiful. And you have something in the book called The 7 Habits of Highly Creative Walkers. I love it. You know, I'm glad to hear you talk about classes. You know, tell me about the classes, you know, because it seems like that would be fantastic to go to one of your courses and, you know, learn the content of the book with the help of an instructor.
Yes, well, Bruce and I are offering an online course, which people can go, they can go to walkingwell.com. where we have all the illustrations and videos that we just give out for free. But then if you want to register, we're going to do a course on, I think the first one's on November 2nd, and then we have another one in December. I'm also offering a course at Kripalu Yoga Center in Lenox, Massachusetts, the last weekend in November, first day of December. I just taught one at Omega Institute, taught a weekend seminar. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, the result was even better than I expected, because this woman came up to me afterwards. We actually videotaped her saying all this. She said, you know, I've been in pain. My legs have been in pain for years. She said, and I had just an absolute transformational experience. She said, because you taught me, and this is one of the things in the book that we also teach people in the seminars, to stop striking the ground with every step. You know, people talk about the heel strike and then the toe follow. That's how they learn to walk. Please don't strike Mother Earth. Instead, let Mother Earth support you. And as Thich Nhat Hanh said, you kiss the ground with every step. And we teach you to make that a big, extended, juicy, loving, happy kiss. So she said, what happened was, when you shared all that and we were doing it, she said, I felt the ground in a whole new way. I felt supported in the whole new way. She said, but here was her breakthrough. She said, I apologized to my feet for pounding them into the ground for my whole life. She said, and for the first time in years, I'm out of pain. I have no pain in my legs.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Isn't that the coolest? Yeah, so I'm, Bruce and I are on a mission because we want a lot of people to have that kind of experience.
I love it. And I hope that Nike sponsors you to come here to Portland and we'll do a live interview with you.
Yeah, that would be so cool. And then in that case, I may have to recommend some particular shoes.
That's right. I'm sure of that. Hey, well, listen, we ran out of time. There's so much more we could talk about, but we have run out of time for today. But I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your website. In addition to walkingwell.com, there's michaelgelb.com. Gelb is G-E-L-B. You can find out all about Michael's work and all the, you know, wonderful things that could be helpful to you. And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview with Michael Gelb whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Once again, today we've been visiting with Michael Gelb, author of the new book, Walking Well, A New Approach for Experiencing Comfort and Vitality in Every Step. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. USA Pacific Time. But even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. And do remember to help KBOO reach our membership drive goal by showing your support today at kboo.fm/give. 80% of KBOO's budget comes from listeners like you, so please consider becoming a member and supporting independent, volunteer-powered radio. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. And thanks again to Michael Gelb and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local, community-based media this fall by donating